What does it mean to be wise? A psychologist recently asked an 8-year-old and an 88-year-old from different parts of the world. Their answers, she reported, were remarkably similar. To know a lot. This is Dr. Jim Tonkwich, and you're listening to the After Dinner Scholar, Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast on the great books and the liberal arts. If wisdom is simply a question of knowing a lot, we would need to conclude that Americans today are by far the wisest generation ever to live. After all, thanks to the internet, we know a lot of things about a lot of things. But is access to knowledge, to data, really the definition of wisdom? Isn't wisdom more a matter of how we live than what we know? And how can the Bible help us? After all, of the 73 books in our Bibles, we classify 7 as wisdom books. Those are Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, the Song of Solomon, the Wisdom of Solomon, and Sirach. Yet for most people, aside from the Psalms, those books seem rather elusive. To help us understand wisdom and the wisdom books as we embark on a new calendar year, we're joined by theologian Dr. Jeremy Holmes. Dr. Holmes, what do Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, the Song of Solomon, the Wisdom of Solomon, and Sirach have in common such that we refer to them as the wisdom books?
St. Bonaventure divides the Old Testament and actually the New Testament as well into 4 categories: the historical books, the legal books, the sapiential or wisdom books, and the prophetical books. I think that division is a pretty good hint as to what's unique about the wisdom books, because the historical books are obviously the history of a certain people, and the legal books are the law given by God to a certain people, and the prophetical books are addressed to a specific people concerning their history and where their history is going. The wisdom books reflect on the universal experiences of mankind, those things that are common to all times and all nations, like having property, eating meals, getting married. Those are not specific to Israel or to Egypt or to America or to Poland. They are just the universal human experience. Modern scholars have found that there was, in fact, an international wisdom literature. There were sages outside of Israel that also wrote wisdom books. In fact, there's one chunk out of Proverbs that is identical to a prior Egyptian wisdom book. And in the early wisdom books of Israel, what you find there is very much what you would have found talking to a sage from one of the other nations. So Proverbs makes no reference to Israel's distinctive history or to the covenant or to the promises.
Now, St. Paul in 1 Corinthians 1 and 2 was somewhat disparaging about wisdom, the wisdom of the world. How is the wisdom in these books different from, presumably different from, the wisdom that Paul condemns?
The wisdom that Paul condemns is the wisdom of the world, or what he sometimes calls the wisdom of words. It's a wisdom that is about getting more of this world's goods than the next guy, getting ahead, getting the advantage. And so it implies a kind of cynical view of things in which one would use beautiful, eloquent language to persuade a crowd to get ahead, to get the advantage, to get more than the next guy. And if we compare that to what we find in the wisdom books of the Old Testament, let's take Proverbs, for example. Proverbs describes the people who are not wise as belonging to 3 categories. There's the simple, who simply aren't wise. They're perhaps young or unformed. They just don't have wisdom yet. There's the fool. This is the one who has set his heart on the things of this world. He's pursuing perhaps pleasure or perhaps riches, and he's determined that he's going to get more than the next guy of it. The third category is the scoffer. The scoffer is the one who laughs at anything exalted, anything high. He laughs at purity. He laughs at honesty. He laughs at fidelity, right? Why are you doing that? You could be getting ahead, right? So the scoffer is a kind of fool. He's the fool's defense mechanism. He laughs at whatever might be outside this world's goods. So when we turn to the wisdom books of the Old Testament, what we find is that what Paul describes as the wisdom of the world, these books are describing as a kind of folly, as a kind of scoffing. I think Aristotle might have described the wisdom Paul is condemning as not properly speaking wisdom, but cleverness, which differs from wisdom by not having the right end in mind.
Same as sophistry?
Mm-hmm. Yep, sophistry is like rhetoric, like real rhetoric, except that sophistry doesn't have the true aim in mind. The true aim of rhetoric should be to bring people to believe in the truth. The sophistry is just looking at the power to make people believe whatever it's useful to make them to believe.
Now, much of the wisdom books is prudential wisdom, that is, as you said, wisdom that's helpful to everybody. Proverbs 10:17, he who heeds instruction is on the path to life, but he who rejects reproof goes astray. Well, I mean, it's hard to disagree with that. Tell us a little more about that prudential wisdom, and how does that differ from promises? Some people pick up the book of Proverbs and feel like it's full of God's promises, and it's not exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the opening chapters of Proverbs are just wonderful in their exhortation to wisdom. They emphasize that the wisdom that Proverbs is offering, although it really is wisdom and takes effort to attain it, it's ready to hand. It's not far away from you. Wisdom is depicted as a woman who stands at the street corner crying out, "Hey, come get wisdom." She stands by the city gates inviting people to come get wisdom. The book of Proverbs says, the beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom. That is, the whole key is to want to be wise. And if you want to be wise, that is, if you want to conduct your life well, then it's possible to normal people to do that. It's not an exotic thing. And so then as you go on, much of the book of Proverbs consists of what sounds fairly humdrum, like don't cheat on your wife, don't steal. The compares, you know, if you get the man who gets involved in someone else's argument is like a guy who grabs the ear of a passing dog. And that all sounds very easy, but when you look around at the world, not many people follow that advice. Lots of people are out there cheating on their wives and destroying themselves and their children and our country. Lots of people are out there stealing and being dishonest. Most of the internet is people getting involved in other people's arguments. So it's not that this wisdom is exotic or distant. It's just that you actually have to think to yourself, I want to be wise. And then pursue that. And then common sense and some guidance from a fatherly figure like the voice of Proverbs can get you there. Now, what happens when you use common sense to guide your life is that there are certain patterns, right? So we have a saying, honesty is the best policy. Yeah, and what we mean by that is that typically if you're deceitful, if you're two-faced, it catches up to you and it will destroy you in the end. We don't mean by that every dishonest person has always been caught, or that every honest person has always gotten ahead of every dishonest person in life. But we are pointing to a pattern in life. By and large, if you're honest, that works out for the better. And there are, of course, loftier reasons to be honest than just practically having things work out, but there is this pattern. So when the wisdom books speak about if you do this, your life will turn out this way, they're pointing to what can be gained from reflecting on the universal experiences of all peoples at all times. All people at all times have had a certain experience with fidelity, with honesty, and so on and so forth. Now promises are what happened to a particular person when God approaches a particular people or approaches you. and says, if you do this, I will do this for you. Or even if you don't do this, I will do this for you. Or so there's suddenly a particular relationship. It's not the experience that everybody has. The promises have to do with the one God, the one true God, who had a historical relationship with the people of Israel and is now extending that relationship to other nations who would like to enter into Jesus Christ, the consummation of all that history. So that's a different, that's a particular relationship. That's not something you get just from gleaning the patterns of universal experience.
Now, speaking of universal experience, one of my favorite books in the Bible is one that I think a lot of people are either confused about or maybe even want to throw out of the Bible, which is Ecclesiastes, which begins, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless, all things are wearisome, more than one can say. That's not what we'd expect in a God-breathed book. Tell us a little bit about Ecclesiastes.
Yeah, so Ecclesiastes, historically speaking, seems to be reacting against the sometimes promise-sounding language of Proverbs and other wisdom books. While Proverbs is a great way to start in gaining wisdom, it can sound a little bit too much like an easy recipe at times. If you're honest and faithful and, you know, don't eat too much at the king's table and so on, you will be admired and wealthy and have lots of kids who adore you and so on. And Ecclesiastes is looking around at the world and saying, well, that doesn't always work out, does it? And in fact, there's a lot rotten with the world. And in fact, life as a whole is disappointing. And the most useful approach I have found to Ecclesiastes is an old patristic and medieval tradition, which sees Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Song of Songs as a trio within the wisdom literature, corresponding to three stages of the spiritual life, the beginner, the proficient, and the perfect. Now, the beginner is what he sounds like. He's somebody he's just stepped into this whole being good thing. His passions are pretty much running amok. He, in fact, wants to break the various commandments. He needs basic advice like, look, stay away from harlots. They're really bad news. Keep your hands off the other guy's stuff. That's where he is. He needs to get rid of sort of out of control impulses and influences in his life. He needs to get out of his circle of friends, you know, and so on. Now, there comes a point where a man has sort of cleaned up his life. He no longer is seriously inclined to break all the Ten Commandments. And at this point, he's ready for the stage of the proficient. So he's sort of done Proverbs. Now it's time for him to look around at the goods of the world and start to see through them. At the beginner level, oftentimes you have to motivate by pointing out how things have a practical advantage. Like if you're honest, oftentimes you get ahead in life. You get more money. That's good. You want money? Good. Okay, be honest, right? But once someone is no longer tempted to steal or whatever, then it's time to start realizing that those initial motivations are not the final picture. And you start to have to realize that the goods this world has to offer are kind of empty. And you have to begin to detach from the real goods of this world, that they're not good. But your heart has to get free from them, because you can't move rapidly towards God when your heart is still abiding here. So you have a guy who is clean up his life. He's done Proverbs. But now he has to detach. That's where Ecclesiastes comes in the tradition. He's going to come in and help you see, well, as he puts it, the meaninglessness, the vanity, the emptiness of so much of what goes on in the world. Why that negative step? It's for the sake of a positive step, that is finally we have the Song of Songs, where you turn to what at the surface reads like the universal human experience of being in love, of man and woman loving each other. But in the tradition has been read more deeply as God coming in love to us. And once our hearts are free from this world's goods through the purging of Ecclesiastes, then, and only then, are we ready to turn to the Song of Songs rightly. Turn to the Song of Songs too quick, you'll focus on some of the wrong details in the book, right? Some of the lush descriptions of the Beloved. But once you have done Proverbs and done Ecclesiastes well, you can turn to Song of Songs. Now you're ready for the stage of the perfect, which is the stage of union with God.
Now, our students read some of the wisdom books. How do they respond to them?
Well, we read within the curriculum Job, Ecclesiastes, and Wisdom. Since we were just talking about Ecclesiastes, speak to that one right now. Students find that a very hard text, and I think it is in part because they're at the wrong stage for it. You need some experience of life to pick up Ecclesiastes and say, preach it. Yeah, you know. When you're young, you think that the next political election will really do something. And then after you've seen a lot of elections, you start thinking, well, maybe, you know, I'm not sure the world's problems are going to be solved by the next election.
Or the next new car, or the next new house, or the next vacation.
Or the next iPhone. You know, it's just it's not that you reach a point where you say this is all evil. But at some point, you just kind of start to think, this is not all I thought it was when I was younger. And then you pick up Ecclesiastes and you think, okay, so you're focusing on one side, but yeah, that's true. And I think this is because, really, young people need Proverbs. They're at that beginning of their life stage. And most of us don't just gallop through the spiritual life, you know, quickly. Mastering the beginner stage is not as easy as read the book of Proverbs, good, what's next? Right? It takes experience, it takes time, it takes being faithful, it takes being honest for a long time. It takes being honest and then getting stung, right? And then you start to be ready for Ecclesiastes, who says, I saw some honest people, and they just got buried by the dishonest ones, and what is up with that? And then it's kind of like, Ecclesiastes is a lot like a lady philosophy in Boethius's book, The Consolation of Philosophy, you know, where she comes in and offers him an extended reflection on honor and, you know, glory and wealth and power and all these things, and points out how they all disappoint at some point or another. And Ecclesiastes is in that vein. You know, the universal human experience includes not only that honesty is but the best policy, but also that this world isn't everything we were made for.
Last January, 53% of Americans resolved to save more money, 45% to lose weight or to get in shape, 25% wanted to travel more, and 23% to read more books. Now, these are all good New Year's resolutions, but let me suggest a better one that may well cover all the rest. Resolve to seek wisdom and begin that resolution by reading and pondering the wisdom books in the Bible. Allow them to instruct you, to challenge you, to confound you. As Proverbs chapter 3 says, happy is the one who finds wisdom and the one who gets understanding. For the gain from it is better than gain from silver, and its profit better than gold. She is more precious than jewels, and nothing you desire can compare with her. Long life is in her right hand. In her left hand are riches and honor. Her ways are ways of pleasantness, and all her paths are peace. She is a tree of life to those who lay hold of her. Those who hold her fast are called happy. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz wishing you a very blessed and happy New Year.